the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And I'm Charlie McCarron.
And today we are starting our engine building series with Wormspan, the sequel to Wingspan. Very, very interesting game. Very similar yet different from Wingspan. Really, I felt like this was a true successor to that game. Just to kind of go over it kind of loosely, you have a tableau of different locations that you are both exploring and excavating, putting kind of cave cards out that the dragons will then move into. You have kind of an action economy of six actions per turn that are represented by coins, and you spend those coins to do the different actions in your list. Each dragon has different places they want to live in, different effects. It could be when you play a card or when you play the dragon, they'll do something, or you can later on go through the caves and explore them and then trigger the effects that way, or even end of the round actions. There's a lot of diversity in all the different dragons. And even they have a little dragon book that has little blurbs about the dragons as if they're real creatures. And I
There's
love
lore.
It. There's dragon lore. From the dracologists, if you will. Yep, so we have the Golden Grotto in the middle with the Crimson Cavern on top and the Amethyst Abyss on the bottom. They still, just like Wingspan, have, and you know, if you haven't played Wingspan, don't worry, but they have eggs that, you know, populate and can be used for different steps along the way. And you're collecting dragon cards and using dragon cards for different things. They have tucking cards under existing cards. There's just a lot of different things that you do to interact with the game. And that's really what brings out that engine buildery feel. It's just your whole tableau is unique to everyone else's. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. In this game, your engine, I guess most frequently your engine is run by exploring through a particular, one of the three caves.
Yes.
And I guess one of the ways that they encourage you to not just hammer the same cave each time is that it gets more expensive each time in a round. Mm-hmm. You have to go into it. So like the first time you go into a cave each round is free, but then you have to pay one egg and then two eggs. Although, in our game, I did not find eggs to be a particularly difficult thing to pay. I was drowning in eggs, but I guess you guys had fewer
eggs. I had so many egg slots available, like, I could have had 14 more eggs and been good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, which is a good point, actually, which is that, so the dragons have slots for eggs, and mm-hmm. you can't have more eggs than you have slots.
Right.
So, like, I ran into the egg limit and actually had to start throwing away eggs because I didn't have any more room for them.
They were expiring, so yeah, you had to get rid of them somehow.
But because the game does, I feel, give you quite a lot of eggs for free, basically. And so you feel pressured to make sure you have enough egg slots to hold them all. It's a really great way to make players want something because, you know, they don't want to give up the free eggs.
Sure, sure. Well, and in this version, you know, instead of Wingspan doesn't have this, but Wormspan has the Dragon Guild, which is a really, like, it's just a subtle kind of secondary mechanic. But basically, all of your cards and all your whole engine can activate moving around this kind of rondelle that allows you to advance along whatever the guild is for that game. There's four different guilds. It changes based on player count a little bit. But ultimately, you can kind of get yourself extra points by getting, you know, halfway around the rondelle and then all the way around and then keep going. It's like either a special benefit or just victory points, or victory points based on something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this game does a good job of, like, you just get a lot of stuff.
You just get a lot of stuff. Sometimes.
So, yeah.
And other times you just play a card and then that's your whole turn.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's tough to get stuff at first, but that is the benefit of engine builder games where, yeah, maybe it's tough to get your engine going, but once you do, it feels great. And then by the end of it, like, we were taking turns that took a long time.
Yeah.
But that's the fun part, and see how much you can do, and like combo off other things, and this one in particular, like you said, with the Dragon Guild, it's like, ooh, I didn't even think about getting this bonus, right. And now here I am. And the dragons themselves often have fun abilities.
People really like getting good stuff unexpectedly.
Yeah.
I find people hate bad stuff happening to them unexpectedly, but they love it when good stuff, which obviously makes sense, but because it's good stuff.
Yeah, the expectation actually diminishes the value. Like, if you're expecting to get something bad, like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, like, if you, like, unexpectedly, like, that's terrible if it's unexpected.
Yes, but if it's good, it's fantastic if it's unexpected. Right. So the Dragon Guild track does that. And another thing that does it is a lot of the dragon's abilities say, okay, you get lots of this thing, and everybody else gets a little bit of that thing.
Yeah.
And that feels great.
The Chancellor Room from Dominion.
Right, yeah.
It's so great.
That mechanic in general, I think, is a really positive one in games because it means that people get council things.
Yeah. We're editing this. It's the council room, not the chancellor room.
Oh, okay. It's just been a while since I've played
Dominion.
Trevor just doesn't want to get burned by the Dominion players listening out.
Especially in that Discord channel. They can get brutal.
Oh, no, it's the throne room that duplicates it. Anyway.
Yes, anyway. That's a different game.
Setting Dominion aside.
Go see our Dominion episode if you haven't seen that.
So, I think the thing that makes this sort of effect so good is that the players who receive the thing, obviously that feels really good to them. The player who is causing them to gain the thing, I think, does not... Well, some people hate to give other people things, but it doesn't feel as bad because you are always much more focused on your board than other players' boards, so you don't have a sense of how much that helps them.
Yeah.
Right? You don't know whether or not that's a good thing for them or not, but it feels really good for you to get a lot of stuff. So... Yeah, I think in general mechanics that give you a lot and other people a little bit are just, you know, it's a no-brainer. Why not include those in your game?
Yeah, and I think in Wormspan specifically, and maybe Wingspan as well, you do kind of pigeonhole yourself into a direction. And so you're like, you're maybe not getting as many cards for the creatures, right, or the dragons. And so, like, that was Ananda's big thing, is that he could not get dragon cards. So if I had ended up getting something that would give everyone a dragon card, he would have been ecstatic.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been a game changer.
Well, and I'm not sure how it does this, but I did get the sense that each of us was horribly short on a particular resource. I don't know about you,
Charlie. Charlie was
kind of all arounder.
Okay,
but not a master of none, so to speak, until the end.
But but Trevor and I were both drowning in a specific resource and just could not get another. Like, I could not get dragons, and you could not get resources.
I could not get normal resources to play my dragons.
I was just drowning in resources though, and eggs. But so that works really well. I don't know how it makes sure that you're short on something, but maybe that's just sort of a natural consequence of the way the dragon market works.
Yeah. There's also something, too, about, like, when you first start out the game, you're dealt, you know, six total cards, and you choose which four you keep.
Yeah.
And you're going to choose four that synergize together, right? So, like, maybe that's part of it, just that initial setup.
Yeah, I mean, I chose my four... to go for the goals. Every round there's a goal you're trying to meet. So, like, you know, have the most shy dragons or have the most aggressive dragons. The dragons have personality
traits. They have personalities. Sorry.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, I think actually of this play, the setup with the four round goals is maybe my takeaway. Because... I think about that a lot now when I'm designing, is how is this game going to be different than the next game I play of this? And just giving players even just a little bit of things to aim for, that's like, oh, this is what I want to do this game. It can do so much for the whole game experience. Because, like, when we started out and you're given the choice, like, which dragons should I pick? I don't know. Oh, wait. because we don't have these out yet. And then it tells us, like, oh, you should go for a shy dragon and then an aggressive dragon. And I love that system where it's happens one round at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, I might have to give up on one of these, but then I'll prep myself for the next round. And it's not like we're getting a ton of points from that, but it's enough to...
It's significant, you know.
Yeah.
Players need goals. Like, from the beginning of the game, they need to want something in particular in order to drive their choices.
Right.
And help them make choices, help them come up with an initial strategy to go for. They need a direction. And this works pretty well. I think this is also a reason why having hidden objectives or personal objectives is so popular in a lot of games. Because if you start off with, you get 1 point for every stone you harvest, then that's going to sort of direct your strategy and give you a direction to go.
What can I do to get all this stone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's why personal goals are popular and secret goals and that sort of thing. I think you have to be careful how you set those up. But in this game, of course, the goals are public, which also works, but it means everyone's competing for that thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny how even just like... something like in, I'm looking at my games now, Roar and Write. The Roll and Write game from Weird Giraffe. They use just a thing where you say, what's your lucky number going to be for this game? Oh. Or maybe it's one of their other Roll and Writes that you pick the number. Anyways, you pick a number, and then anytime you get that number, you get a point for it. And it's like the simplest thing ever.
Yeah.
But it really steers you, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is the thing I'm going for. So, yeah.
I definitely agree. Like, I've had feedback when I was, you know, in my earlier design years, I was really bad about creating motivation for players that weren't in it for, like, the story or the narrative aspect. They just like, oh, what mechanic do I want to achieve by the end of this game? It's like, oh, that's not what the game is. But, like, they still want that guidance. They want to know, like, what should I be good at doing? It's like, that's a really important piece, for sure.
Yeah. I think another way that this game gives you that kind of objective is with this hatchling mechanic, which I think is new. I don't think they had cards like this in Wingspan.
And maybe expansion, it's possible. But,
maybe. I don't know. But... For the benefit of listeners, some of the dragons are this hatchling type, and I've noticed that they follow a particular pattern. So they have an ability that's split into three parts. The first part is whenever you explore, meaning when you take the explore action in this dragon's cave, you get to cache, or you might cache something, or you might tuck a card, or you get to put a resource on this card. And by the way, in Wingspan and Wormspan, scoring is quite easy for resources. Basically, every resource you've cached on a card is 1 point, and every card that you've tucked under a card is 1 point, and every egg is 1 point. Everything's 1 point.
Yeah.
All this stuff, which makes it very easy. I think Small World does that as well, where everything on a territory is one defense. In general, that's really nice because it makes it easy to evaluate things when there's no... everything is just one. But anyway, so the hatchling, when you go on the space, you get to cast something or tuck something. For example, this, I've got a card here, Leaf-Eating Cricket Catcher. When you land here, cash one milk from your supply here. The second part will say something like, anytime you cash milk, gain something. In this case, gain a dragon. Oh, this would have been really good for me. anytime you cash milk here, gain a dragon. And then the third line is, when the third milk is cashed, also gain... in this case, two crystals. But it's sort of a quest.
Yeah.
You know, you want to cash the things there. You cash the third thing and you get the reward. But the really cool part is that it doesn't stop there, because you can keep cashing things and keep getting things. And because each cached item is 1 point, this is an engine that you can use to get a lot of points. And in fact, one of the interesting things about these boards is, if you excavate all the way to the end of a cave and then fill the cave with dragons, the final space on the board will let, well, depending on which cave it is, The first one says, cash up to 2 resources from your supply onto your dragons. And the other ones have similar things for tucking resources and getting eggs. But you can cash those on the wormlings, or sorry, the hatchlings.
I did that earlier. I'm sorry.
I
messed up.
That's fine. You can cash them on these hatchlings, and that also triggers their ability. So if you can fill up the cave, now you've got the payoff,
right?
Which is that now you have a very reliable points-generating engine, which I used in this game to get a lot of points.
And if you could put a lot of your hatchlings into one cave, that could be a really nice little cave to just jaunt down as long as you have the resources for it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So hatchlings are a really cool mechanic that gives you a specific goal to pursue. And it's sort of like a quest.
And just thinking about the board structure and how these engines work, I think one thing that's cool about Wingspan and Wormspan is that you have these three rows of cards that you're building up, and it's sort of like you have three different engines that you could run at any time versus, like, we'll see in other engine builders in this series, like, how do those work? But sometimes it's like, oh, your engine is just like you everything in front of you you're using at once, but this is like your worker placing to activate your engine in that row.
In a row at a time.
Yeah.
So, and the, just like the feeling that you can be creative somewhat, but sometimes the dragons have specific rows in that they have to be placed in, but other ones are a little more flexible. So you can, make the combo that you want for that row. And that's where Wormspan is a little bit different than Wingspan, where it feels like you each cave you make can be a little more flexible.
Yeah. And it's also a little bit more specific too. Like the top cave will focus on resource generation, where the bottom will focus on cave expansion.
And all of them are necessary, so you have to use all of your engine. Even when you don't invest very much in a cave at all, and it's very painful because it's very weak. I was so short on dragons, I had to go to the middle cave, even though it was awful, because I needed dragons, and that was the only way to get them for a lot of the game.
Yep.
And then I started realizing, oh, wait, I can get some dragons from the Dragon's Guild. I can get them from some of these caves. There are other ways to get them.
Yeah.
But actually, I think I noticed one thing about this that's different than Wingspan, which I think might bring me to my takeaway.
Ooh.
Which is, so on the board, obviously the viewers can't see this, but you have, of course, your dragon cards, which are part of your engine.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have things in between the dragon cards.
Yeah.
So the way that it works is you can go as far into the cave as you have dragons, and you fill the cave with dragons left to right. And then when at the end of the cave, you're going to walk through it. You're going to get any benefits that happen from the dragons, but you're also going to get the benefits from between the cards. And one thing in this type of engine builder is you have a lot of cards that don't really do anything during the game. So, like, they have an effect when they come into play, or they do something at the end of the game. But it's not very exciting to add these cards to your engines. And I think most engine builders have some things like this, where it's not very exciting during the game, even if objectively it is balanced or good.
Right.
Like, one-shot effects where they resolve when they come into play, those are usually pretty good effects, but they don't feel good because they don't enhance your engine. And you crave this sense of your engine getting better.
Yeah.
But I think what's really clever about this system is you can have those one-shot and end-of-game cards, and it still feels good because it means that you can get to the next in-between reward. So you have, no matter how you build your engine, no matter what cards you decide to put in your engine, you're always getting stronger when you add more cards, even if those cards don't actually do anything.
With those explore actions specifically.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think, to summarize my takeaway from this, I think if you're doing an engine builder game, you should try to make it so that players, so that your engine gets better just from having stuff, even if the stuff does nothing, because that gives you a lot more flexibility in the sorts of things, the sorts of cards that you can add to the game. And people will still feel good about putting those cards in their engine because they're unlocking the things that they always get from having more things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like back to what we said at the beginning where you accidentally find yourself
getting benefits,
gaining benefits that you didn't really think too much about. But yeah, that's a good game design philosophy too, is like as you're playing a game, like you can't really screw this one up. Like, yeah, sure, you might be less efficient, but the stuff you do is set up so that you're going to keep getting better and better, even if you're just like paying some resources to put some dragon down.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter which one you put down. It'll benefit you.
Yeah. Even a useless dragon will still advance your engine.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess the other place, which is kind of interesting, is I don't know if we've talked that much about the excavation mechanic.
Not a lot, no.
But before you can put a dragon in your cave, you need to excavate the cave. So they're these little square excavation cards. I don't know if that's what they're called, probably.
Yeah, I think so. Or cave cards.
Cave cards, yeah. So you have to have a cave card on a space before you can put a dragon there, and each cave card gives you a one-time reward when you build it. And I think this is just a cool way to have more one-shot cards that still advance the game. Like, you feel good when you're putting down one of those cards just because you get something from it. And you can have, and that lets you include a huge variety of one-shot effects in that cave's deck.
Yeah, and at first I thought it was just resource generation and stuff like that. And then we started getting into the kind of the crazy ones where it's like, okay, now you can trade two cave cards for this specific effect. It's like, oh, whoa, this is awesome. I really like it. Which actually, I'll go into my takeaway with that too, because I think, to try and put it simply, my takeaway is that it's really important to have the different areas of the game interact with each other in some way. And so what I mean by that, like the different mechanics, the different systems. And we talk about that a lot when we're like talking about our games. But this one does a really good job of showing these, what do we have? I think at least three or four different main systems that are happening, and they all talk to each other, they all influence each other and change things, giving you resources, getting you dragons that allow you to do other things. Like, you're almost given a plethora of ways to advance your engine in a different direction. And I think it's really important to have that, especially for an engine builder. Don't just focus on the one mainstream thing. How can you go about that in a different way, or find a third way to tie these all together? If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also, like, this one is, you do have to kind of do everything in general, but it still feels like you get enough specializing on what you're aiming for. But yeah, that's another thing to think about with an engine builder, is like, how can you make someone feel like they are doing a special path versus like, oh, I have to do all these things, and if I don't do all these things, I'm going to lose.
Well, and yeah, like, I should have pursued the hatchlings, because that is very much a good, you know, point-generating system. But if I hadn't done that, then there was probably a better way that I should have gone that I missed earlier on. And I was, like, looking back over it a little bit, and I was starting to see some other things I should have done if I didn't have that. And so, like, yeah, being able to measure your different types of cards you're picking up, like, oh, this is the end of the round actions, this is every time I walk through. There's a lot of kind of layers of when their abilities activate. And sometimes you can even get cards that will activate things that would never activate again, which I thought was a really cool thing. Because I had the one-time activation card that I got to activate twice because I had another thing allow me to activate it again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so just like being able to call back to what you thought was done, that was really good, that you really liked, feels really good.
Yeah, and that just makes me think of something else I've been thinking about with games lately, is like, make sure when you're designing a system that you have enough design space for effects like that. Like, yeah. Where, oh, yeah, okay. And thinking about, like, okay, if there was expansions to your game, what would, how could you expand it? And, yeah, if you set up a system that's has enough things going on in it without being overwhelming, then that's, like, the sweet spot.
Yeah. And I do want to say, too, just comparing Wingspan to Wormspan, it felt like there was more going on for sure, but I also felt like maybe there was a change with the graphic design or something that I didn't feel as overwhelmed with the new information as I thought I was going to be. And maybe that's just a personal perception.
It could be familiarity with the system.
True. But yeah, I felt like there was something was done that I just did not get overwhelmed by it. When I first played Wingspan, I was overwhelmed by what all was happening and trying to analyze everything. So I think there's something helping that. Or I just, you know, have played a lot of games since then.
Yeah.
I have played a lot of games since then. Just for this podcast.
Just on this podcast alone, yeah.
Only 100-something. Is,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I guess.
We were talking about, well, are we going to run out of games that we own? And, No,
we'll just keep buying games. It's fine.
Keep getting games. Yeah.
I still have loads of games that we have not played on the podcast. Oh, yeah. Yet.
Same. I don't know how that's possible, but same.
It's I'm looking forward to the next 100 episodes, guys. All right. Well, I think that's our episode. Tune in next time for our next engine building game.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.